with the baby boomers. Yeah.
Hello.
Okay.
Hello. It's time to get started. Welcome to the call. I'd just like to give you a little information about how the call will work, and then we'll get started with our interview this evening. I'd appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the 6 button, except for Jan, and that will mute all background noises. So if you would just push 6, and then at the end of the interview, if you have any questions, you'll push 6 again, and we'll be able to hear your question. So I'll tell you again that number in case you forget. All right. I am Dotsy Bregel, and I'm the founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be found at www.nabbw.com, and also boomerwomenspeak.com, which is the number one site on all search engines for baby boomer women. I'm passionate about educating and empowering women at midlife, and since launching Boomer Women Speak in 2002, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis. And I have to say, it's my passion, and my prayer is that we can embrace all women and provide them with the means to soar. I just want to welcome everyone this evening, and just to share again, the topic of our call, of course, is retirement. And here to help us is Jan Cullinane. Hi, Jan. How are you this evening?
I'm great, Dotsy. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, good. It's great to have you. Jan is the co-author of the book, The New Retirement, The Ultimate Guide to the Rest of Your Life, which is published by Rodale. The second edition of The New Retirement is actually available August 7th, just for your information, the first edition actually hit the number 2 ranking on both Amazon.com and BNN.com, second only to the previous Harry Potter book. Now, that is an amazing fact. Good for you, Jan. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Jan has appeared on TV both nationally and locally, and she has conducted more than 50 radio, internet, and television interviews. She's published articles for newspapers and magazines, including the Suburban Press, Indianapolis Prime Times, Living Southern Style, Let Life In, and The Ocean Breeze. She's also the retirement expert for our own NABBW, so you can read lots of her articles by visiting our site and reading your newsletter. Jan and Kathy Fitzgerald, and Kathy is Jan's co-author, they conduct retirement seminars throughout through their company, which is called Retirement Living from A to Z. And you do that throughout the country. Is that right, Jan?
That's right.
Okay. And just for the record, Jan's website, because everybody's into checking everyone out on the web these days, is thenewretirement.net. And just remember, it's .net and not .com. So that's thenewretirement.net. If you want to go there, you can learn more about Jan and her book, and you can even purchase the book through the site. Is that right, Jan?
It has links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, yes.
Okay, good. Okay, Jan, so that's your introduction. Let's get on with the interview for this evening, and we'll start by asking a pretty general question, and that is, what are some of the ingredients for a successful retirement for women? And I just want to mention that the book, The New Retirement, is not a woman's only book. It is for, you know, men and women. But this evening, because we're the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, we're going to be focusing on women. So if you could just give us some of the ingredients for a successful retirement for women, that would be great.
That's a great question, Dotsy, and as I go through some of these points, keep in mind where finances are kind of always hitting us with information about finances. Really being in strong financial shape is only one of the kind of successful ingredients. So with that being said, one huge ingredient for successful retirement for women is having strong social support. And there have been many studies doing this. A more recent one was in New Haven, Connecticut, where they found that women with strong social support lived an average of 2.5 years longer than those without strong social support. So that is a huge one. Another one is what I call having something to wake up for in the morning, because most of us, most women, like to have some sort of structure. Some people do like the day just to unfold before them without any sort of a plan. But they found most people, women, tend to be happier if there is some structure. And if you think about it, having a job or wherever your structure is going to come from, whether it's your religion, whether it's volunteering, whether it's getting involved in hobbies when you retire, whether it's being into lifelong learning, all these things give you a feeling of perhaps contributing, of intellectual stimulation, and provides a sort of framework for your day. So that's something to wake up for, is an important ingredient for successful retirement for women. Another one is having a high level of activity. This is mentally as well as physically. That's kind of a no-brainer. We all have heard that expression, use it or lose it. And they intertwine as well, because they found that when we exercise, for example, more oxygen goes to the brain. They used to think we couldn't generate any more nerve cells. But the past decade or two, they found that is not the case. We are able to do that. So that linking of the exercise aspect along with the mental activity of doing something to keep our brain sharp is very important for a successful retirement. Another one is having a healthy attitude. Again, studies showed that people with positive attitudes toward aging live longer and are healthier. So that's an important one, too. A strong financial plan, that's the one we often hear so much about, but often to the exclusion of some of these other areas that I think are just as important. And I know we'll probably get to that a little later in the interview when we'll talk about money some. If you are married or you have a significant other, another important ingredient is the willingness to renegotiate roles. And that one can be a huge one. People need to start talking about what it is they want to do in retirement, what shared activities, what separate activities, if they're thinking of relocating, where. You know, maybe people need two homes because somebody wants mountains and somebody wants the water, the ocean, and they don't want to live in California, for example, say. And so that's a good one to start thinking about. You have to really get to know if you are married, your spouse, or if you have a significant other, and start working on those issues. So those are the big ingredients that research has shown is important for a successful retirement for women.
Wow, that's quite a lot to think of, but it actually sounds very similar to a list of being healthy even when you're not retired, except for a couple extras in there. I mean, it's important to have the strong social group and something to wake up for, structure, you want to be able to contribute, high level of activity, mental and the brain and
exercise.
The healthy.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, the healthy attitude. I mean, a financial plan, really. I mean, you need one anyway. And then just, renegotiating roles, of course, I think is huge. But, you know, it's interesting because I read so much about retirement just because I get a lot of Google alerts for baby boomers. And so much now has to do with retirement because every time the boomers hit another life stage, we really shake things up. And but the majority of the articles I read are about financial planning. And so it's really interesting and good to hear these other things that are even, equally as important, if not more important. And, Jan, one thing I'd have to say is that I know, your book is The New Retirement, and this is something that we didn't talk much about when we spoke yesterday, and we're getting this interview organized, but I just want to throw it out here. What I keep hearing is that boomers are retiring differently, and they're going to retire differently, and so, of course, here the boomers go again, changing things. And one of the things that I know from just my own life, is that I believe that I've seen the generation before us retire too young. And with people living longer, it sure seems like there's a huge portion of their lives, 20-some years, where they're not working. And I look at that, and I think even some of these people who, I believe retired too young also believe that they themselves retired too young. And you know, they could have just given so much more meaning and purpose to their life had they continued to work. So
that's
I just
very true.
Yeah. So
people
I think we're
could
we're
be living.
Right. I think we're learning from, you know, our from the greatest generation, and you know, and that's why just because people are healthier and living longer, that we're going to continue to work longer. I mean, a lot of people are saying it's for financial reasons, but it's also just to keep the brain and, you know, and the body going, I think.
And that's why one of those things about having that strong social support is so important in retirement, because a lot of people get their social support from their job.
Oh, that's
if
true.
If you are actually retiring in a traditional way, which we call it the new retirement because it does reflect just those things you're saying, you may be spending 20 or 30 or more years in retirement. People are healthier in general, although just recently there have been some reports out that people in their 50s now are reporting more aches and pains than people in their 50s in prior times, more obesity, more diabetes. So we may not be all as healthy as we actually thought. This is just kind of very new information, because that's one of the things that we're all so healthy. We're out there, you know, climbing mountains and rafting rivers, but yet people are kind of reporting some of these issues now, particularly the obesity and the diabetes ones that are creeping up, or creeping down, I should say, in age.
Are you there?
I am.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought for some reason I thought I lost you.
No.
Yeah, you know, and I've read the same thing. There's even something called boomeritis, because we're the generation that ushered in the exercise craze, and because of that, our bodies, you know, we're getting arthritis sooner, tendonitis, bursitis, and so you're right. I've also read some of those same reports. Okay, let's get back to retirement. A few months ago, there was a report that stated that we crossed over the 50% line for women who are single in the U.S., and we are now at 51% of women who are single in the United States, and that's not boomer women, that's all women. And so I know that we have lots of boomer women who are single at midlife and will be facing retirement, you know, as single women. So are there any unique factors to consider for women who are single?
Yes, they are. And first of all, that one factor is the huge number. As you said, the percentage of all women. But if we even narrow that down a little bit more, if you look at just women 45 and older, you have about half of them, about 25 million, are unmarried. And as the AARP said, which I thought was an interesting way to phrase it, the number of single women 45 and older outnumbers entire populations of countries such as North Korea, Taiwan, and Australia. So I thought, that's a different way of looking at it.
Wow.
And another real interesting thing about single women is that now they make up 22% of all homes purchased. This was 2006. That's a huge thing. Many developers, many home builders now are looking at what is it women and single women in particular, what is it that they're looking for, because they are a huge contingency now of home buyers. In fact, I was just in California a couple months ago talking to developers and community saying, what is it single women are looking for? They realize that is a huge, I think, neglected area for marketing and for catering to. But if we also look at a little bit different things as far as single women and unique factors, I call it the three D's. When you look at death and divorce and delayed marriage, even though we may not be single right now, the good chances that at some time we are going to be, because of death of a spouse or a divorce. Many women are delaying marriage now, and so we are, most of us, going to end up being single if we're not already single. So it's an important thing to think about, even if you're not right in the category. And I think the other good thing is for single women, there's been a huge paradigm shift. It used to be considered almost something not negative, but there's a woman who's an author and an historian. She said that single used to kind of be viewed as a state to overcome as soon as possible. But now there's been a shift that, of course, it's viable, it's desirable, people are choosing to be single. some of the positive things of being a single woman, of course, is that you get to be the decision maker, the decision maker. You don't have to worry about what other people want you to do, where they want you to live, how they want you to live their life, et cetera. But, you know, on the downside of that, you may not have a person that's able to back you up financially or emotionally. And being a single woman, I think, has implications if you're thinking about relocating, which I think we should get to a little bit later. Are there particular places that are better if you are a single woman? The answer is definitely yes. Single women have to generally work longer than married women do. From economic necessity, but again, as you pointed out, a lot of people derive a lot. It is their passion, their work, and they want to continue doing it as long as they can. But I think we need to realize, unfortunately, the statistics show that 1 out of 4 people who plan on working forever, and that's really how they're going to solve their financial issues, or it's their passion and that's what they want to do, can't for some reason. They get downsized or light-sized, as some companies like to call it. They have to care for perhaps an aging relative or whatever. So they are not able to do it. So it's important to keep that in the back of your mind if you think that's going to be your plan, that you'll just work forever. And, again, there are many financial considerations, too, as far as being single, as well as that idea that, in general, single women are going to work longer.
Right. Wow, that's a lot to think about. And you know, one thing that you mentioned that I have to address is the fact that being single is no longer a state to overcome. And the reason I just have to speak to that is because in our forum community there are many, and that's at boomerwomenspeak.com. We have a forum for singlehood, and I would have to say the vast majority of the women who come to our forums that are single are really embracing life. And, I mean, there are a few who are, like, you know, in the market to meet someone, but the majority of them are happy at midlife being single, and if somebody comes along, fine, but I'm not out there, you know, trying to meet somebody. I'm just, you know, I'm living life, I'm doing what I want, I'm kind of putting me first for a change and enjoying it. And so it's so great that society has a different, you know, perception of single women now. So anyway, okay, let's get back to the retirement topic. What about women and money issues in retirement, you know, single or married? What is it that we need to think about? And then in addition to that, well, why don't you answer that one first, and then I'll give you a little bit more of a deeper question. So,
okay. That is a very important area, and that is one area where I'd say as women we really need to do some soul searching, because women, there was a very recent report, again, done by AARP, and it kind of looked at how women felt about their financial state, and it's very interesting, but it's inconsistent. Like, women really, in general, we think we're better off financially than we really are. For example, this survey that AARP did found that 61% of women, this is 45 and older, felt confident they'll have enough money for retirement. Well, that's not too bad.
Yeah, that's not.
But 62% didn't have any kind of plan for retirement. So this is just a feeling, but it was not based on any planning. That's the big caveat. That's the big but in there. So
There's
a lot of stuff coming out now about kind of expectations or perceptions and then the reality of what's really happening. And I think, as you know, since the leading edge of the boomers have hit 60 now, we're going to really start seeing what people are saying is going to happen and how they feel and then what the actuality is going to be. So that one is interesting. Women in general tend to be more risk averse when it comes to investing. I think that's both good to be conservative, but it can be bad because you may not accumulate as big of a nest egg. So I think that one's sort of a double-edged sword. It can be a good thing or bad, but they have found women in general. Now, I know I can't speak for every woman by any means, but in general, they're more risk-averse. Big thing, of course, is women outlive men by several years. So if you're part of a couple, then you have to think about that you, chances are you're going to be living several years longer than your spouse. And just in general, when you look at men and women together, if you're a woman, you in general will be living longer. So that is something important. So we should all be saving as soon as possible. Not talking about necessarily starting in your 30s or 40s, but from the time you get your first job and you fully fund your 401k and you get your employer match, and now they're even changing that quite a bit so that you have to opt out of the savings plan at your work instead of opting in. They used to make it opting in, and so many people just never got around to it. Now they're trying to make it more difficult to encourage savings by making you have to opt out of your savings plan. So there's not just an automatic deduction, and I personally think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. So that's one. Women also make less than men. We've all seen these statistics. They're a little bit better than they used to be. In 1980, women made about 60 cents for every dollar men made. Now it's up to about 76 cents. Why? Well, we know that women often have maybe a break because they're raising children, because maybe they're a trailing spouse and that their job, they're not able to advance as rapidly in a career because maybe they're following their spouse around if they chose that route. Perhaps that they have worked part-time at some point, or they've had to care for an ailing parent. There are a lot of reasons, and I want to point one out that maybe for our group of baby boomer women isn't as important anymore, but I think if we have daughters or perhaps younger sisters, it's very important, because this is, again, pretty new information that's come out about negotiating, how women negotiate their pay. And they've cited instances at the get-go, say two 22-year-olds graduating from college, and they gave an example of two engineering students. One was a woman, one was a man. They were both offered jobs from the same firm. They had the same GPA, same, you know, leadership qualities. They were virtually the same except for their sex. The woman was offered a salary. She loved the place. She accepted. The guy said, you know, I really think I'm worth more than that. And they gave him $5,000 more. Well, when you look at that over, you know, the example they gave, if you looked at it over the next years until the guy turns 60, he ends up making more than $500,000 more than the woman, assuming like a 3% cost of living raise and they both moderately invested. And I just think that's a huge thing that almost needs to trickle down, that as women were not, in general, as good negotiators, and that can certainly have a compounding effect as we age. So, you know, maybe some of us are past that and we didn't negotiate as well as we should. I think personally, I know I've been guilty of that myself at times, but I just thought that was an excellent point to bring up that should be passed along.
Wow, that's amazing. And what's amazing,
isn't that
too,
amazing?
It is. And the other thing that's pretty surprising is how quickly that adds up.
That's right.
Oh, my gracious. Yeah. Okay.
I thought that was a biggie.
That's a biggie.
So a few statistics. If you are not proficient in all the financial aspects, of course, number one, I think we should try to become as familiar as we can. But if not, I'm a believer in seeking professional help in that, and I would advocate having a fee-based certified financial planner, one where you're just paying a fee so there's not any kind of money being exchanged every time a trade is being made, but just a general fee. And there's actually a nice website called feeonly.org that allows you to find fee-only certified financial planners. And certified financial planners have taken lots and lots of classes, lots and lots of tests that they need to pass, So it's a little bit of a different level than just a financial advisor. Not saying financial advisors in general can't be terrific, but say you're just kind of starting off from scratch, I think that's a good place to look first.
Very good.
Okay. I think this is another. Now, this is, again, very indirect, but I think when we're talking about finances and down the line, it's something to think about. We know that in the news there's all this information back and forth about immigration, but if we just look at the hard facts and you look at, say, for example, if we look at all the population growth among people 45 and younger, it's all virtually in minority groups, Hispanics and African Americans. What does this have to do with our discussion about people that are younger? Well, it's the idea that wherever we live, I think we need to be strong supporters of our school system, because I think we would all tend to agree that education is often a key for mobility. And who are the people who will be buying our homes? Who will be the people that will be paying the taxes? Who will be the people that are going to be representing the workers of the future?
And caring for us.
Which is huge. So I think, although that seems a little bit off the topic, and I'm kind of a little bit on my soapbox right now, but I think that's something else to be thinking about. We need to be strong supporters of our schools for the people who are coming up, and I'm sure everybody in the NABBW are strong supporters of education, even if we're empty nesters and we don't have kids we're sending to school now. I think that's very important to think about.
Yeah, Jan, and you know, that is so true, because there is, you know, I've read that there is a fear that there aren't going to be enough people to care for us, because the generations behind us are smaller, and not as many people are entering the medical profession and caregiving professions as they once did. So that's an excellent point, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When you look at, you know, close to, you know, 76 million boomers, those of us born between 1946 and 1964, this huge group here who will care for us. We do want people to be educated. We do want people going into the health profession. The number of gerontologists, yeah, they're not that many.
There aren't many. Not even now. So.
Exactly, not even now. The crisis is just about here. So,
right.
But getting back to just a few rules of thumb in general that experts will say as far as money. One, there's kind of two warring factions out there. One group will say, hey, you only need about 70 to 80% of your pre-retirement income to live on in retirement, because think about it, you're not, you know, maybe commuting to work, maybe you don't need as many clothes, although so many places have gone casual, maybe, you know, your expenses will have gone down to a great degree. On the other hand, there are those who say, you know what, you need 100 and maybe 100 to 110% of your pre-retirement income. Because some of us had kids much later, we still have them in college, you may be in that, you know, sandwich or club sandwich generation, the younger kids and the older parents perhaps you're taking care of, you may have all these pent-up desires, you're going to travel like crazy, and that is not cheap, as we all know. You may want to relocate to a resort-style community where all these community fees every month, your expenses are going to go up. So you really have to, again, that goes back to that idea of sort of planning ahead and thinking about where it is you want to be and taking a look at that. Do you only need 70% of your pre-retirement income to live on as a rule of thumb, or are you in the category of needing 100 or 110%, especially the first 5 years? After that, you know, kids are out of school and maybe you've got the wanderlust out of you, maybe then you can drop it back. But that's something to think about. Another kind of rule of thumb in general is if you spend only 3 to 4% of your nest egg each year, you're going to be pretty safe about the money issue. However, you know, 3 to 4% of a small nest egg isn't that much. So that's a tough rule of thumb if you're not talking about having a good amount in your nest egg. Another one, and this is, they calculated it based on people who are 60. If you take what your living expenses are at age 60, and you multiply that number like 25 or 30, mm-hmm. that will give you a general idea of how much you need in retirement. You
wow.
know, as an example, let's say you're making $80,000 a year when you're 60. Well, if you multiply that by 30, it's saying you need about $2.4 million to help make sure, you know, you don't run out of money before you run out of your life. And, of course, you got to make sure you include inflation. That's a huge one. And actually, in the book, we have this little graph showing if you bought a group of goods and services today for $25,000, say, if you look down the road, say, 30 years from now with a 4% inflation rate, that same $25,000, the same stuff would cost you $80,000. So that's a biggie that people shouldn't forget about is inflation. Like if you think you have, you know, $800,000 saved, you think that looks pretty good, think about, you know, what's that going to do for you 30 years from now if you're still around?
Right.
And we all know inflation's a big killer. So those are some general ones. There's another one called the ballpark estimate that's very easy. This is a kind of a retirement calculator. And whatever your search engine is, if it's Google or whatever, if you type in ballpark estimate, you will get this nice little printout, and that helps you to estimate what you will need in retirement. Again, a few things to think about, though, is how long will you live? And you better put down you're going to live into your 90s just to be sure. So the inflation aspect, how long you're going to live. And the other big one is healthcare expenses. We all know pensions are disappearing. We all know employees are expected to pick up larger and larger amounts of their healthcare. So, you know, don't neglect that either.
And it might be a good time to mention that long-term care insurance, too, when you're talking about the cost of health care.
Yes, long-term, that's a kind of a tricky one, though. I mean, long-term care insurance is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It just, there's no way around it. It is expensive. Some experts say, you know what, if you can afford it, you don't need it.
If you can afford it, just save the money.
Save the money, and if you can't afford it, well, you know, you're out of luck. You're not going to be able to buy it because it's too expensive. Generally, they'll recommend if you're, I'm not exactly sure of my amounts here, but if you're making somewhere, say, between $50,000 and $200,000, that's a good range to consider it. But they've had some problems with long-term care insurance, that premiums can change, they can go up, you know, what's the length of service? There are a lot of questions you ought to think about looking at long-term care insurance. If you're single, though, if you don't think you have, you know, a spouse or children, or if you're married and you think maybe your spouse or children aren't going to be there for you, it certainly is a good thing to consider, but I'd have to say, it may not be for everyone. They may not be able to afford it. Not everyone's going to need it. They're looking to make some big changes in long-term care insurance, but it's still kind of a sticky one. It's not kind of a straightforward thing that I would say everybody ought to get it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to hear your opinion on that, because actually we just got long-term care insurance, but my husband's a diabetic, so we were really, you know, we were grateful to get it, and you know, there's a chance that we just might need it. Who knows? But
And we decided not to get it, so there you go.
Yeah, how about that? Okay, so Jan, anything else about that, you know, the money issues in retirement?
Well, if you wanted to look at it based on age groups.
Yes.
You know, if you're 40, 50, 60, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
This, a few ideas would be in your 40s. You know, I would say at that point, if you have any credit card balances, you really got to start paying cash. I mean, I advocate that from, you know, with my 19-year-old son and our 22-year-old and our 25-year-old, pay everything every month, which they do. But,
yes.
But especially if you're in your 40s, you better get into that. You got to have an emergency fund. You know, they always say you need to have 3 to 6 months of living expenses set aside in case
mm-hmm.
something happens, and you need to rely on that. The whole savings thing about contributing to your 401k so you get your full employer match, but I would say that from the get-go. You should still be investing for the long term at that point in your 40s because retirement, like you say, the trend is now a later retirement. 50s, one big thing is, you know, we've all heard about boomerang kids. We've all heard about the question, what should I do first, fund my retirement or fund my children's education? Without a doubt, you better fund your retirement, start fostering some financial independence in your kids if they're not there yet. You can always consider downsizing to a less expensive place, perhaps, if it's an issue, if money becomes an issue. Really should get pretty rid of all debt, most debt, except maybe a mortgage. Start really, you know, finagling your financial plan so that you really are going to be able to live on it. And 60s, be a good thing actually to kind of practice living on your retirement income. If you're thinking at 70%, see if you can do that. See if that is worthwhile and if it is viable for you. And, you know, really start socking away any extra money that you can at that point and maybe become a little more conservative in your investments. And some of these thoughts, by the way, are not my original ones. This is from a woman named Helen Huntley from the St. Petersburg Times talking about what to do at each age. So I did want to throw that in.
Okay. All right. Can you say her name again?
Oh, Helen Huntley.
Helen Huntley.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, let's move on because actually we only have about 15 more minutes if we want to take a couple questions. What about any trends involving women and retirement?
Okay, well, we already mentioned that marketing, a lot of that is now aimed toward women entering retirement. Financial planning firms are orienting a lot more toward women. It's recognized women are often the decision makers if they are part of a couple. So there's a big trend, not so much within women themselves, but outside forces realizing how important they are. And I think that's a big one. We've noticed, Kathy and I, when we do our retirement seminars, we do this one for a company where they talk about relocating, and they actually give people an opportunity to talk to representatives from these planned communities. And we've noticed a real interesting thing. A lot of single women or women part of a couple will come with a group. They're in the same socioeconomic group, have the same likes and dislikes. They're kind of looking for the same place and sort of bringing their little social group with them. I think that's kind of a real neat, interesting trend. So, and working is another huge area that there's some trends emerging as far as women, too.
Okay, so just, you mean working longer?
Well, not only working longer, but very interestingly, they found that women, as when their childbearing days are behind them, that they often start embracing work.
Oh, right.
Time.
And men
while
are ready.
Men are ready now to finally, you know, get to know their spouse, get to know their grandchildren, and relax. And the women are now all gung-ho, doing all these things that maybe they didn't have the opportunity to do.
Yeah.
So that's a huge one.
Mm-hmm. I learned that at the Boomer Summit in Chicago. They addressed that the women are, you know, hitting the gas pedal and the men are hitting the brakes. So it's interesting.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And another big thing is women-owned businesses. In 2006, there were about 8 million that were majority women-owned. So women do work longer, and again, a lot of that is for financial reasons, but two-thirds of women said that they want to work in some fashion in retirement because they like the mental stimulation, they like the social support, they like all of that structure that's involved. And this one is interesting, too, that twice as many women compared with men think of their job or career as enriching their life. I mean, they like working. And so that's another big thing, I think. And Manpower just came out with a list. They asked 2,400 U.S. firms, where are the jobs for people now in 2007? Where are your needs? And I just thought I'd run through this list real quick. Number one were sales representatives, two were teachers, three mechanics, four technicians, 5 is the management executive area. 6 are truck drivers. There's a huge need for truck drivers out there. Hmm. 7 being general drivers or delivery personnel. 8 accountants. 9 laborers. And 10 machine operators. So there's a concrete list if you're looking, well, where should I go? What should I do if I'm looking for a second career? The health field, of course, as you mentioned, big shortages there. The hospitality industry in general, because boomers on average are affluent, and financial advising are also big areas.
Okay, so those are some second career trends for boomer women. No, that's right.
That's right.
That is right. Okay. All right, so we've talked about some second career trends, and also you mentioned women-owned businesses. How about entrepreneurs, midlife women entrepreneurs, who are taking what they've learned in the corporate world and maybe starting coaching businesses, or they've been stay-at-home moms and now they're, you know, entering the workforce or launching new businesses? Do you find that to be true?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, that there are 8 million majority women-owned. I mean, that could be a one-woman show, mm-hmm. or that could be a big thing where people are, yes, coaching, advising, speaking, consulting, opening up a bookstore, doing a franchise. There's so many, many different things that they could go into, starting their own restaurant. I mean, you're absolutely right. Taking the skills they learned in the corporate world, then running with a passion that they have and using those to actually start something else on their own.
I just think that is so exciting. And that's what really jazzes me. And that's something that we like to address in the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. I mean, a lot of the women who are joining to kind of catch the spirit. Like, they're at midlife, they're thinking, okay, I want to do something different. And they're joining to just see what other women are doing and, you know, consider what they might want to do. And then the other people who join the association are women, you know, they want to stay educated about what's happening, you know, with their bodies and their families and you know, their health, everything else. But other women that are joining have sites and services and books, et cetera, for boomers, and they're joining to network. But a lot of what you're speaking about, we experience at the association. So it's really an affirmation, which is kind of cool. Okay. Let's see. What about specific suggestions for women, you know, whether they're single or not, considering relocating? I mean, you know, boomers travel more than any other generation before us, and you know, a lot of it has to do with our families being spread out. Some of it is, of course, for business and then pleasure. So we travel for a lot of reasons, and because of that, we're finding other places that we might want to live. But what are some suggestions for relocating?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that's the thing that I do a lot of talks about, is this whole idea of relocating. And, you know, when you think about it, most of us are in a particular place because of a job, either our own, our spouses, our parents moved there, and that's how we ended up where we are. But now, when you retire, you know, conceivably you could move anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, it can be an overwhelming choice because you have unlimited choices. It can be anywhere. So a lot of people, when they start thinking, maybe I'd like to relocate, and I'm not a big winter person or whatever, or the traffic is too much, or I'd just like to try another country to live in just for the experience of it, but they find almost that it's overwhelming because there's so many. So, you know, you have to really almost kind of look at what are your sort of non-negotiables. Look at things such as friends and family. That's a huge issue. For many people, that's the end. They want to stay where their families are if they're around, and that's it. You know, home is where the heart is. That is where their heart is. There's no place like home, as Dorothy said. They're not going to move anywhere, and that's certainly great. Other people want to, their kids have scattered. They have no children. They just want to try something different. You can't be sure your kids are going to always be in the same place either. It's a very mobile society. So think about issues such as, if you are considering relocating, what about transportation? I'd say you want to be relatively close to a major airport. What about cultural and recreational and social activities? If you live, say, in the D.C. area, Washington, D.C. area, and you're used to going to the Kennedy Center and all the restaurants there, are you going to be happy living in a very small town where it's going to take you an hour and a half to get to some sort of a play? Maybe, maybe not. What about, you know, an economy? I'd say whether you're planning on working or not, you ought to see if the place you're considering is economically healthy, because you may be going back to work out of desire or necessity, or even just for resale if you decide it's not for you. What about climate? That's often a huge driver of why people move. Medical facilities are important to consider. You may feel you're in the best of health, but, you know, if something happens, you want to be 2 hours away from a hospital. Cost of living is a huge issue, people say, but, you know, or my advice would be, just because of places, for example, that don't have a state income tax, like Florida, for example, may not be the least expensive place. You have to see how your retirement income will be taxed. You have to look at things like property taxes, insurance rates. Mm-hmm. They can all vary so much, so you really have to do a detailed analysis of that.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, and Jan, a lot of this they can learn in your book. Is that right? I mean,
Absolutely.
So let's do a little plug for the book here. It's The New Retirement, and it will be in its second edition on August 7th, and you can get it through Amazon.com. You can get it through BNN.com. You can also get it in the bookstores. I know I got my copy at, let's see, Borders. I don't have the second edition yet, though. But just because of the time, we have about 12 minutes, a couple last questions, and then we'll see if anybody has any questions. What if you're concerned about boredom? Like you're looking at retirement, or maybe you're even thinking of just doing like a semi-retirement, but you're so afraid because you just don't know if it's going to work. Am I going to be bored? What am I going to do? Can you address that at all?
Yes, I think that's something a lot of people think about. What am I going to do in retirement if I'm not working? And I just wanted to hop back to one other issue,
okay,
because I said
I would
mention it, and that's about single women and relocating.
Oh, sure.
And just a thing to look at would be, for single women, look for active adult communities as a possibility. That's where one person generally has to be 55 or older. Some people don't like that kind of style of living. Others embrace it. And another are these big master plan communities. The reason I'm citing those two are because they tend to be gated, which is a security thing that a lot of people like, and they tend to have full-time, they call them lifestyle directors, mm-hmm. that are always generating all these social types of things. So if you're concerned about meeting people, it's sort of built in for you. So I just wanted to throw that in.
Okay, thanks.
But going back to being bored, I came across this quote by Eleanor Roosevelt. I think it's great. It says, do something that scares you every day. And I thought, boy, that's an antidote for boredom if there ever was one. And I think, what a great philosophy to live by. But will you be bored? And people are asked in surveys, why do they want to retire? The number one reason is to do other things. So what are your other things? For some people, there's nothing they'd rather be doing than what they're doing right now. So by all means, you know, go for it. But again, will you be bored? And my feeling should be nobody should, when you think of all the volunteer opportunities, getting more into spirituality, getting more into volunteering, lifelong learning opportunities that are out there like crazy, many free courses you can get through your community college, audit classes, no exams, no papers. You can just enjoy it. Oftentimes, if there's space available, you can get a seat in there. Go back and take that physics class and figure out how to do those AC and DC currents that never made sense when you were 18. At least that's what I feel. So I think that really there is not going to be an issue of being bored. If so, there's so many opportunities. Another survey by Sun Life Financial, this is what people listed they wanted to do during their first 5 years of retirement. Domestic travel, pick up a hobby, international travel, start a new career, spend more time with children and grandchildren, start a business, volunteer, take classes, get a degree, purchase a second home, relocate, assist charitable organizations. And I like this quote by this author named Jules Renard. He said, it's not how old you are, but how you are old. And I think that kind of
sums up. Oh, love that. And his name again is Jules?
It's Jules, J-U-L-E-S, Renard, R-E-N-A-R-D.
Okay, great. Okay, let's see. Do you have, before we take any questions, do you have any websites? Of course, your book, any kind of services, surveys or references that you would like to leave us with? I know you've got a lot in your book, but are there any in particular that you'd like to share?
Sure. I would say, of course, Excellent Sites is the NABBW, the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, and Boomer Women Speak, of course, are outstanding sites with lots of information on all facets. If you are interested in relocation, two free sites that let you sit at your computer and it asks you what's important to you. It will spit out a list of suggested places, fun and easy to use, is bestplaces.net, bestplaces.net, and another one is findyourspot.com, findyourspot.com, so I'd recommend those.
Mm-hmm.
Education, if you're, again, into the computer and you want to take a look at free classes that are offered, you can go to thirdage.com. There's free online classes, money, travel, computers, etc. And one other interesting one, if you wanted to try out a career, you do have to pay for this. You're kind of mentored by a specialist in the field, but vocationvacations.com, where you can go, so you want to learn how to design dresses or brew beer or raise alpacas, whatever you want, pretty much. They have a place you can go, be mentored for, say, 3 to 7 days. You do pay for it, but it allows you to try out a new career.
Very cool. I've heard of that one, and that's good to be reminded of that. Okay, and then, of course, your book, The New Retirement, which is published by Rodale. Okay, let's just see if anybody has any questions. I can't imagine anybody's going to have any questions. You covered everything, it seems. You're a wealth of knowledge on this topic, and I know I learned a ton. But if anyone does have a question for Jan, you just need to push, if you muted yourself at the beginning of the call, you just need to push the number 6 and you can ask a question. Does anybody have a question for Jan? Okay, it doesn't sound like anybody has a question, so we just have 5 minutes left. And I guess, you know, another question is that I just thought it would be interesting for the women on the call to know is what you did prior to writing this book, and are you in any type of retirement, or what is your plan for retirement, Jan?
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. My background, I have my Bachelor of Science and my Master's from the University of Maryland in College Park. Go Terps!
Yes.
and I was working on my doctorate at Rutgers in New Jersey when I kind of have been a trailing spouse. My husband's in the financial area. We were transferred around to several places. That was actually one of the reasons I wanted to write this book. I wanted to write a guide that would be helpful for a boomer like me, somebody who's thinking, oh, maybe I'll move somewhere because I kind of had lost my roots having been transferred several times. But I also wanted to look at all the facets, the psychological, the health areas, the volunteering, the working after retirement, you know, the travel opportunities, and do that holistic approach. So that was really sort of one of the big things that triggered it, was moving around, starting over each time and seeing. Professionally, I taught in a community college setting for many years. I taught anatomy and physiology, microbiology, health psychology, math, you know, ran the science and math departments, and because I like the research, I like interacting with people, and so that was sort of another outgrowth. I like doing the research. Of course, I love traveling to all these cool places to check them out for relocation, but just looking at the studies that have been done, the surveys that have been done, hearing people's stories about it all. So that's my background, science primarily with psychology mixed in, and then at the community college level, which I think is great because you just really get to know every student. I would teach all the lectures as well as the labs, so you really got to know everyone as an individual, and they keep their classes small. I'm a big proponent of community colleges.
Good. And Jen, would you say that then that this whole retirement issue is your passion? It sure sounds like it.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's so interesting. There's so many avenues, like you have pointed out, people going to work for themselves, people that are just enjoying things. There's so, you know, with 76 million boomers, we can't, obviously one size doesn't fit all. There's so many avenues to pursue, so many things to look at. As a group, we've been described as a pig and a python. I hope you like that analogy. This huge group, I think it's my science background that I like that, moving through, and of course we have shaped society so much. But you also asked about my background. My husband retired a year ago tomorrow's August 1st. It'll be a year ago tomorrow, as a matter of fact. And I go around, do my talks and all, and so I don't know. It is my passion. Would I call it working? Well, only when I'm delayed on the airplane or sitting around in the airports. Other than that, you know, it's fun and delightful, and I'm having a ball.
Yeah, it sounds like you love what you're doing. So anyway, I just want to thank you for being on the call. I think you've done a wonderful job, and I'm going to promote this teleseminar because I believe that there's just a wealth of information within the hour. So, Jan, thanks so much for being with us this evening, and I will be in touch.
Thank you, Dotsie. I really appreciated the invitation and delighted to be on.
Great. Okay, have a great night, and I'll talk to you soon.
You too. Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.